What is going on, everyone? Welcome to A Theology of Hustle, where we talk about work, God's kingdom, and the people who make an art out of bringing them together. Now, all my episodes are special to me. I love them all. But I do have to say that this one is a little extra special. Today, you're going to be hearing from a woman named Helen. She has been a family friend for a long time. She and my in-laws have been through a lot of life together. Helen has an incredible story of overcoming traumas, overcoming difficulty. This episode's a little different. It's about what happens when God takes your work away, and it's a study in walking through tragedy just in a way that we haven't dealt with yet on this podcast. And Helen is this incredible woman of faith. I think you will find great hope from her story, and she's just an amazing person. You're going to love hearing from her. You're going to walk away from this podcast hope-filled for your journey in your work and in your Christian life. Helen's story has been so important to my wife and I that our third child is even named after Helen. His name is not obviously Helen, but he is named in honor of her story, of the faith that she has shown, of the hope that her story shows. And so I think you can tell even there why this episode is so meaningful to me and my family. This will be an episode you will want to share and let people know about. There is a book that Helen has recently been has written in, and we'll talk about that. They'll be in the show notes if you want to pick that up. It's full of amazing stories of women, and it's a real encouragement. So you're going to want to pick that up. Go ahead and while you're thinking about it, give me a rating and review on whatever app you're listening to this episode on. And like I said, I would love for you just to share Helen's story with anybody that you feel like needs to, with your social media. Just share her story, share the hope that comes from that. And I hope you enjoy this episode with Helen. Well, Helen, thanks for inviting me into your home and interviewing with me.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
It's good to be in Amarillo and see you here and all that stuff, you know. So
right.
So why don't we just jump off, and do you mind just giving people a little bit info as sort of who you are and what
sure.
you do and all that?
My name is Helen Smith, and I grew up in Dallas. And when I married my husband that passed away first, he was from Amarillo. So we moved up here and he started his dental practice. And I just love it. I love the people. I love, I just love the openness of everyone. I've loved having a life here. And now I am also a mom staying home, but the kids are adults. And I sometimes work at my husband, Jeff Smith. I work at his greenhouse some, and we married in 1997, and we really do have a wonderful life here. He works hard at his job, and I volunteer at church and in several ministries, which I seem to really like, and they're blessings to me. I also we go visit grandkids up in Milwaukee and go to Chicago, and
they are
far away, but we like it, and it's beautiful up there, and it's just far and few between when we get up there. So that is my life here. I just enjoy my relationships here, and all of my side of the family lives in Dallas, and we get there pretty often, so that's really neat for me. So
yeah, that's awesome. I love that you're up in Chicago some, yeah. and, you know, yes. in my neck of the woods.
Yeah,
it's kind of funny how all that works out, right?
It, I know it does. I like that too.
Yeah, that's cool. So Actually, I want to jump. Like, what do you do? What do you, what ministries do you volunteer with?
I work at Patsy's Place. It's a group of women in a residence that it's like a halfway transition home. And most of them have been in prison, probably for substance abuse or fraud.
Yeah.
And we go in and do Bible studies, and we have relationships with them. And they are really excited to be there and thankful and grateful. And so we try to just pour life into them and be kind of cheerleaders. But we do Bible studies, and most of them have become believers in prison and want to go. They elect to go to this residence for a year, and knowing it's a Christian-based place. And
wow.
It's really cool. It's a great ministry.
I love that.
I know. I like it too. It's really, they're sweet women, and they're just open to, they're just appreciative of life and of us and of anything. They just feel so grateful for where they are.
Yeah. We did a similar ministry up in Chicago with a guy.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. It's cool. It's very rewarding just to walk with somebody.
I know.
That, isn't it?
I really have enjoyed it. And they make you feel comfortable. They make me feel comfortable.
Right.
And I kind of like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. Totally. That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, so let's jump into your story then.
Okay.
You mind talking to us a little bit about that?
No, I don't at all. I married Bob Britton in 1981, and he was graduating from dental school in Dallas, and we moved up here to Amarillo from where he had roots and grew up, and we settled here, and I really enjoyed it and made friends and started teaching school, and he began his dental practice. And then we started our family, and we had Philip in 1985 and Patrick in 87 and Ben in 88. And we loved our family of just boys, and we seemed to always, it was a very active and chaotic household, but it was so fun.
Yeah.
And we did baseball, soccer, all the things that kind of boys like. And it was really a great life. We were involved in church and did a lot of things at church. The boys were involved in the activities there, choir and mission friends and some of those things, and we enjoyed all of those things. And Bob loved the outdoors, and he loved hunting especially. And he and a friend, Mark, loved to duck hunt, and they found a place at Lake Meredith, which is about 45 minutes from here, and they would go and make a duck blind. And I didn't really know much about it, but they looked forward to the months of November, December, and January. Those were the months that you could legally duck hunt. So they would go every Saturday and do that. And they really got into it through the years. And they built a small little aluminum boat that would hold about four people. And they would take it on the lake in the area where they always went. And so they did that every Saturday, unless it was just awful, awful snow or something like that.
They were pretty hardcore.
They were hardcore.
Wow.
And they ended up taking their oldest son, and who was started out, you know, about 10 to about 13. And then Philip, our oldest, started going when he was about 9. And so the four of them usually went on Saturday mornings early, and then they would be home about 1. So didn't take all day. Most of their hunting was in the morning.
Sure.
And this particular morning was December 14th in 1996. But the Friday before, Mark called and said he had a little bit of a cold, and that also they might do a little Christmas shopping. So he wasn't going to, he and his son were not going to be able to go. And so my little ones that were 8 and 9 had never been, and they just begged to go. And Bob assured me that they would just sit in the boat. They wouldn't do anything with shooting or anything. So it was a beautiful day. The sun was out. So I let them go, and they got up early that morning and changed in from their pajamas into the camouflage, which was half of the fun of
getting all dressed up.
So I did not get up that morning because it was early, and I heard them, but I just stayed in bed. And so they left, and I presumed they were just off going by Donut Stop or something. And so about 10 o'clock, Bob called me, and they were out on the lake in the boat. And he said that everything was great. They were staying warm. They had layers and layers of clothes on, and that the sun was out. And I don't think there'd been much action with the birds, but they had just enjoyed the scenery, and it was just real still and quiet. And so I was very reassured that everything was going great. And then about 11:30, he called me and said that the wind was coming up a little bit on the lake, and that they were going to go on to the shore in the boat and just come on home. And so I thought, well, that's great. And so they went, tried to get to the shore, but I never heard exactly how far the shore was or how what the lake dimensions were or anything like that. So I didn't really know exactly what we were talking about. But anyway, I just went on and did whatever I wanted to do that morning, got some things done. And about 12:30, I started calling his phone, and I never got an answer. And I called again about 1, and then I started calling about 5-10 times, and never got an answer. Yeah. And so I thought, what in the world, you know? And so usually what they would do is maybe drive through a place to eat or something on the way home. But usually he would answer or let me know what was their status. And so I called Mark about 1:45 and said, I can't get a hold of Bob and the boys. And he said, well, maybe they had a flat tire or something like that. And about 2 o'clock, he called me back and said, I'm going to take you out there and we'll just look for him, because I'm sure he was thinking, why haven't they answered the phone? And but he was trying to be really calm for me, I know. And so he and his wife and their daughter, who was about 9, we all drove out to Lake Meredith. And I was so thankful he was available, because he knew the area that they went to, because it's pretty big. I had no idea.
Yeah.
And so anyway, we started driving out there, and we were talking about reasons that maybe they were not able to return our calls or my call or something. But anyway, we headed on to Lake Meredith, but we went up this hill, and when we came down the hill to the lake, I saw our red Suburban backed up to the lake with a trailer in the water, and my heart just sank. Mm. I thought, oh no, where are they? They've never left. And so Mark said, and the lake was so choppy, and the waves were just really seemed massive to me. And I thought, what has happened? And Mark said, we had a plan. If the wind came up, we just would, you know, head to the shore and just not move around or anything like that. Yeah. But I know he was trying to just reassure me. But we walked around. We got out of the car and walked around and shouted for him. And we just there was nothing there. In fact, we didn't see anybody around.
Yeah.
And so I got back in the car with Carrie and her daughter, and we prayed and just for peace and for wisdom of what to do. And so after about 30 or 45 minutes of kind of wandering around, Mark said, I think we need to call a park ranger. So we went up to a place and called for the park ranger, and he came, and there was a pavilion type place that we all met in with chairs, and we went in there and we talked, and he, I guess, called kind of a crew of rescue people to come and help look around. And it was about 4 o'clock then, and we knew it was going to start getting dark. And so I just stayed in that pavilion, and then all the people that were like rescue rangers or whatever, they came and they went out. And I don't know exactly. They just stalked and walked around and tried to get their bearings around the lake and looking around. And so really by about 5:30, it was pretty dark, and we just we didn't know really what to do, but they said they would keep looking in for most of the evening. So I was glad, and all of my family lived in Dallas, and so there was a little ambulance thing. And so I went in there and called my family in Dallas and called several of our good friends to pray. And finally, about 8 o'clock, they came to me and said that they had found, and they described a little boy, and it sounded like my Philip, my oldest one. And so anyway, luckily, Bob has a sister there that came, and she went, and they identified Philip. And so I knew then, and my heart just sank, and I knew then that Bob wouldn't leave any of them unattended or anything in that kind of shape. And so I knew that this was really going to be bad. And anyway, they looked around more, and the kind of media and lights, those people all came out, news people, and had friends that got there. And we all just stayed and prayed, and just everybody was basically in shock of an upcoming tragedy like this. And anyway, about 10:30 or 11, I decided to go back with some friends, because I thought this was just too painful for me to stay out there. Yeah. And so we drove back to my house, and my pastor, Howie Batson, came over, and he prayed, and we talked. And then about 5 girlfriends stayed with me and stayed all night, and they cleaned my home. But when I walked in to my house and saw the boys' pajamas on the back of the chair, I thought, oh my goodness, you just, when the Lord calls you, you just go. You don't take anything with you. All the things that we think are so important of stuff, that just isn't. They just went as they were. And that was something that just really pierced my heart. Mm. And anyway, the next morning, kind of got out about what family I was, and people started coming over, and a group of guys went out with the searchers, and they all went back to the lake, and they found Bob that day. But they thought that maybe they could find Patrick and Ben, but it was just lasting kind of too long. And then the water was getting so cold, they decided a couple days later to call off the search, the divers. It was just too cold. Yeah. And so anyway, so we ended up having a memorial service for everyone, and it was really perfect. It was very personalized. And one of the things Howie said is, we can be disappointed with God. And I was, and in my perspective, I thought, wow, we have been faithful to church, and I thought we taught the boys Bible and scripture, and I just thought, wow, why is it that something like this would happen to a faithful church-going family like that? And then I just reflected on the fact that this is a broken, fallen world, and unfortunately, there's tears and disease and death and things that it wasn't meant to be, but that's how it is now. And so that's what happened. It was a broken world that a tragedy like that happened. And the several months went on, and I did have some faithful friends in Amarillo that we did things every day to keep me busy, because I was a stay-at-home mom. And my family, I went back down to Dallas for a while for over the Christmas holidays and got through those months. And then in March, they found Patrick at Lake Meredith. Wow. And then in May, they found Ben, which was good for some kind of closure. Sure. I was thankful for that. Those months were difficult, and I felt like I just was in limbo with my life, and I just thought, how can I get used to a new normal? And
I mean, I know that story,
right?
And I've known it for years, right?
And yes,
it still just gets
is, it's just overwhelming, that story.
I appreciate you being willing to share.
Well, thank you.
I would imagine in those first few months, right? I mean, I imagine do you remember a lot of even?
I really, don't actually. I remember getting through it, but I don't remember exactly how each day went.
Right.
But I'm thankful to be able to get up, and the Lord was able to give me strength to get up and try to find a purpose. Yeah. That was the difficult part, because my life had been all centered around my boys and being a wife.
Well, and that's why I really wanted to tell your story on this podcast, because your work was your family.
Right.
Right. And and there is no work more all encompassing than that work. And to lose your work is just,
I know.
Right. And it's the purposeless. Yeah.
I mean, exactly. I needed a purpose. I needed my identity with being a wife and being a mom of all the activities that the kids did was gone. And I didn't even know really where to turn. And I did go to a couple of counselors. And I think it was probably too early the month after, but then I went back into Howie's office. He carved out a time every week for me to come in for an hour in his busy schedule. And we just sat in there and prayed. And then we cried. And after a few weeks, we talked about a purpose for me. And so we ended up finding a few volunteer jobs at the church that I did, which gave me a reason to sort of get through the days. And I appreciate that so much. He was like Christ with his hands and feet. He lived like Christ to me. I mean, he really did take care of me in a situation where probably no pastor is very well trained for anything
right,
like this.
Yes,
because it's very, I mean, it just doesn't happen.
Yeah,
really.
There's no classes that teach you
exactly
how to pastor through that, right?
I know, exactly. Yeah. And so
I think about that a lot, and I think about Howie and your story, and just like, I don't even know as a pastor, how I would.
I know.
I mean, but a lot of it was just, he was there, right? I mean,
he was there, he was present. And if there was anything that I needed as far as media, I mean, sometimes they'd want updates, and sometimes I felt like they were a little pushy and I just did not want to hardly talk to him. He would do that for me, and he took over that way. And you never forget anyone that does that, or you'll never be able to repay anyone that does that.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
anyway, he did it graciously. So
did you grow up a Christian? I mean, were you always just in a Christian home?
I went to a church in Dallas, and we went every Sunday, and we really were regular attenders, and we were very involved. And I think it was when I was about 16, it was when I started going to Young Life, and that's really how I became a Christian.
Really?
Through Young Life.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Because I knew about Jesus, but I didn't really understand the personal relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's really where I found that. And from then on, I just really loved studying the Word, doing campaigners with Young Life, going to some Christian camps. So
yeah,
that was just the way God carried me through my journey. And that's how I became a Christian, really.
That's amazing, because I feel like I walk through life and I get angry with God over like very minor things. You know what I mean? Like,
yes,
God, what are you doing? You know what I mean? But if anybody has cause to like go to anger, right?
Right.
I mean, your story is
right.
That. So I don't even know what I'm asking.
Right. Right?
But like, how did you walk with God through all that stuff? And
well, I think at first, the first few weeks, it was hard to focus and concentrate on anything, to read the Bible. I mean, it was sort of like I knew that that God was the only constant in my life. I knew that, but it was hard to really read and find comfort sometimes.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And, but he did. I mean, I never felt like he left me or I left him. I just did depend upon him, and friends would help me as far as talking, giving me scripture to meditate upon, and those things helped me. And I did keep going to church, but definitely there is that wonder of, wow, I just cannot believe that this happened, and that, I mean, in my mind, God could have intervened and stopped the wind or whatever. But being in this fallen world, that doesn't happen always. So most of the time that there's anything tragic, unfortunately, God is grieving with us. And I knew he was. So it was difficult sometimes to not be. I didn't feel like I was angry, but I was really disappointed and overly sad. I mean, just
I think that's that's
valid ways.
Right, yeah, very much so. Sorry, I'm just like even processing.
No, like, I mean,
yeah. So can we talk about Jeff then?
Yes, let's talk about Jeff. That is really that truly is God's testimony to me that he was faithful, even though he was faithful through all the other months.
Yeah.
I had a good friend, Jane, and she, after we found Ben in April, which seemed, I mean, that was only 6 months, but I had to find a purpose. And I thought, am I going to need to go back to work? What does my life look like?
Yeah.
And she knew a man, Jeff Smith, who was widowed 4 years before then, and he had two boys, and they were 9 and 11, and she just said he brings them to their elementary. He's involved, and he's a believer, and he's just a wonderful guy, but he might need a wife, or they might need a mom, is what her thinking was.
Right, sure.
And so, but also really her main purpose originally was just to let me talk to somebody that was younger that had been widowed, which wasn't very many people. And so she took me into his greenhouse to meet him, and I enjoyed that. And actually three other friends came. I felt sorry for Jeff when I think about it. Four people coming to see who he was. Oh, gosh. But anyway, he called me that night. And for 3 weeks, he called me every night. Mm. And I asked him questions about heaven. I asked him questions that we've even just sat here and discussed about God's purposes and disappointments and the broken world. And he gave me scriptures every night to try to comfort my grief. And it really was good because he had traveled that himself. And it was a wonderful time to kind of gain a friend who really was coming from a position that he knew what he was talking about. Yeah, and he knew how to counsel and what would be important for me to know. Hmm. And so then after a few weeks, we ended up meeting and having, I mean, I'd met him before, but just having dinner and doing some things with the boys. And then ended up after those 3 weeks or a month, we saw each other every day. And after about 6 weeks, we just knew that truly God had brought us together. Yeah. And it was just perfect. They needed a mom, and even Andy, their son, when we told him his son, when we told him we're engaged, he said, "This is the best day of my life." And so it was just so affirming that that was the right thing. Yeah. And it did. We got married in the October of 97, which was really less than a year after my accident. But if I hadn't, if I had had grieving children, it would be totally different. Yeah. I wouldn't have even, you know, even sought anything like that. But the fact that it was me and Jeff was willing to take me on, and even though he had grief too, yeah, and he yeah. just knew that mine was fresh grief and a mother's heart broken, and he was willing to take that on, which was wonderful that he would do that. And so anyway, we got married, and it's been great. We've been married 21 years, and we now have grandchildren. And so the Lord has blessed me with a full life. He really has. And I am so thankful for that. Doesn't mean that I don't have days where, of course, I miss Bob, I miss my boys, but I'm thankful that I'm able to go forward in life. And this is my journey, and this is the story that I have to tell about giving people hope that have been in situations that are maybe death or losing a spouse or a child, or it's not really what you would want for your life, as far as it doesn't seem like a trade-off losing four people but I think you have to look eternally and think, oh, okay, someone accepted Jesus through this picture, and that's really why we're here on earth. And so I need to just always keep that in mind. Yeah. So, but
yeah. And the hope that we have as Christians, right, is that death is not the end. Right?
Exactly.
So without that hope, right? Like,
I know there would be nothing. I mean, if I had sat in that memorial service and thought that I would never see my kids again, what a hopeless feeling.
Yeah. Right. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the only way there is hope. I mean, the resurrection, right? I mean, new life. And
exactly. Yeah. It's just a picture of God's love for me. And I'm thankful when I was 16 that I understood what it was to have a saving relationship, a saving knowledge of Jesus and what he did for my sin. Yeah.
No doubt. I had all sorts of questions in my head, and now they all just disappeared.
That's all right.
I think there's something really beautiful, though, about Jeff and his work. Because
right.
He owns a greenhouse, yeah. right? And, like, it's life.
You're exactly right. Like, yes.
The whole thing is just this beautiful picture of...
Right. Right.
Yeah. God's... yeah, God's bringing life. And
I know, yeah. Planting those seeds and growing life. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's something to that with your whole story and yeah, just
that is exactly right. Yeah. I like that picture. I really do.
Yeah. It's great. He's a solid guy.
He's a great guy. He really is.
Very much. So,
I know.
How do y'all go about though? Just like finding purpose and I think there's even an interesting analogy with how old his kids were when y'all got married.
Right.
And like, what was that like refinding your purpose like?
Well, I was excited about being a PTA mom again and getting involved in school. That was so fun. And they were all involved in band, which was fun to be involved with the activities of that. And I just always wanted to just be a stay-at-home mom, after teaching in school. And I'm just was so thankful that we had these two boys that needed a mom, and we all just tried to be all in together. And I mean, of course, there was times of, I mean, sadness for me, and I'm sure they had times of sadness too. But we really did make it all work, and it was good. It really was.
Yeah.
And we enjoyed it. And Jeff was excited to have a wife and sure a companion. And and so God blessed us both immensely with the way that worked out.
Yeah.
And I didn't have to go through a lot of, you know, maybe dating or whatever.
Right. Yeah, I can't even imagine.
I know.
Right?
And that was because I was young. I was 41. So I really kind of wanted to remarry, and I'm sure, and he did too. And so that was God's hand on that.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
For sure. No, it's pretty incredible. It's pretty incredible. So how do y'all work through stuff like that together? I mean,
well, it's interesting because I lost 4 people. I feel like I get kind of more attention for that.
Yeah,
and, sure. He, definitely suffered. His wife was ill for several years, and he went through all those steps and the doctors. And so he sure has his story. The kids lost their mom young. And
they were really young, right?
5 and 8, I believe. Yeah. And so, and we listen to each other. We encourage. He's very encouraging to me. And still, I mean, I can turn to him tomorrow and just say, I just still can't believe all this happened, and kind of start reflecting back on my past, which is natural, but it just, if I think about it too much, it just does make me just kind of sad. And I am so glad that I have something to go forward with. I mean, and I know God, whatever circumstance you're in, He will show you some kind of purpose, whatever it is. May not be remarrying if you've lost a spouse, but it will be something that He uses to bring glory to Himself. You know, I want to bring glory. I mean, this is a story that I can give the glory to God for this.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. It's amazing. It is amazing. And you've been telling your story a little bit,
right?
Yeah,
I have told it through the years. I really have. And I've talked to people one-on-one that have lost children or spouse, and I find that rewarding. And like I said, I'm not sure, you know, 30 years ago, I would have thought that that's what I was going to be intended to do for my life, but it obviously is the way God planned it out for me. And He, you know, my story isn't through yet. I'm still on a journey.
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
Yeah.
No doubt. Well, so you were just in a book. You wrote your story in a book, right? Do you mind talking a little bit just about the book?
It's called Hope, and there are various stories. A girl, Brenda Trafton, kind of like the Lord told her several years ago. She had a story of her own, and the Lord kind of was, she had six women in mind that had various different stories, but all of us were redeemed redemption in them. And so she asked each of us to write our stories for this book. And I was a little bit hesitant because I thought, oh, I just don't know if I can bring up those wounds and scars again to write it all out. But I found after I wrote it that it was really good for me to write it out and do that.
Yeah.
And I did. And it was came out April this year, 2018. And it is, we've really had a lot of feedback from it. And women and men have told us that they have read it and that they have found hope in it, and that they, some people have become Christians by reading it and realizing that there is someone that doesn't change in this world that does care and that will love you through all kinds of things that we all have struggles and trials. We do. And so that has been really good. And we've had a few times to speak to people in women's ministries and just different groups. And I felt like it was the right thing for us to do and to talk to people. And it's been good. It's called Hope. And
that's a powerful book. I got to read through it.
And all the stories are good.
Yeah.
They're all different. Yeah. And I think everybody could find one that they can relate to or might have struggled with.
Yeah, we all need hope, right?
I mean, we all need hope. I mean, being hopeless, you couldn't face tomorrow.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. This question may be a little out of left field, so I might be putting you on the spot just a touch. But what advice would you give to somebody who is journeying alongside somebody who is going through tragedy? Like, you know, like, what do you feel like were things that people could do for you that were the most helpful? Or does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I think, unfortunately, a lot of times people, and me too, don't know even what to say to somebody. Yeah. And I think telling them you love them, telling them that God loves them, and being a listener, sitting in oftentimes crying with them. But I have journeyed with some people that have lost spouses, and I do share a little bit of my experience, but everyone's is different, and I want to listen to them and try to make them realize it isn't going to be over in a month or two, that it's going to be a long journey, probably to the end of your life. But you can find joy. I really intentionally try to choose joy in my life. And it's just an intentional thing that we all need to do to have that gratitude and joy that we are alive, and that we are, through the hardships and through the walking through things that we don't want to be doing, there is a greater purpose. And we do a lot of these things for the greater good of, and I listen to the people. I try to encourage them. I try to share scripture, but I sit and let them cry, and I don't want them to be too hard on themselves, because sometimes they have an unrealistic timeline that they should be snapping out of some of these things really fast. And not necessarily everybody's different.
Yeah.
But I do feel like you need to be intentional to want to go forward and make a new life and make a new normal.
Yeah.
That's what it's, unfortunately, that doesn't seem like that's what you want, but it can be good. And when Howie was talking to Jeff and I before we got married, he did say that it's not going to be the same for either one of us in our previous marriages, but he said different can be good, and it is. And I think that's good wisdom.
Yeah. So many things there. So yeah, because there is that balance, right? Like you can't get over it too fast, but you also have to move on and like,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
There's that. Cause I would imagine the morning never really goes away.
Right. It doesn't. And I still question even to myself, I think, did that even 21 years later, 22 years later, that really happened to me? I mean, it just seems overwhelming. In fact, yesterday I was somewhere and a man and his wife taught Sunday school to Patrick when he was 5. And they just said, we've been wanting to tell you this story. And so they told me this little story. And I mean, it was a good story. And I was so thankful they told it to me, but it was just kind of heartbreaking hearing it too. I was just overwhelmed thinking, wow. And then it just made me think, I'm looking forward to going to heaven. Yeah. I really am, and being reunited. And I love that we have that hope that we will be.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I could see how. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was also thinking, what a premarital counseling session to be in for Howie, right?
I know. In fact, he felt sort of protective of me some, just because it had been such an unusual situation. And he was young. He was like 32, 33 years old, but he had a lot of wisdom for his age. Yeah. And, but he took Jeff to lunch as soon as we got engaged, and just wanted to visit with him and make sure that he was a solid guy. You know,
I love that.
It was really good.
I love that.
I loved it too. It was so sweet. And, but anyway, I just think a lot of times it's the unknown. I mean, it was probably the unknown for Howie, unknown for Jeff and I, but we just put one foot in front of the other and persevered, and we've been blessed. We really have. Yeah. Yeah. And I know as a couple, we've given people hope. I mean, when they see us, they think God is good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because you're just this, I mean, I'm going to brag on you a little bit, but just this like amazing couple. Well, I love spending time with you.
Exactly. Yeah. It is. It's just, it's something that you really couldn't put together, but only God could do that.
Yeah. Like redeem all that.
Exactly.
And bring goodness out of tragedy.
Exactly.
And, yeah. Yeah. And if we don't have that, I
know.
Just keep going back to this.
Why would you want to really, you can't live without, could never live without hope, and just the goodness that God gave us. And then also the looking forward and realizing that this isn't our life. This is just a vapor, a blink of an eye. In fact, when I was in Dallas, like a week after the accident, I went home for Christmas to my parents' home, and my sister brought over a lady that had lost her son and father-in-law and a niece in a car accident. And she was just, it had been about a year and a half, but she told me this story about that. I just was overwhelmed. I was still so much in shock. And she did say, the boys are asking Bob right now at breakfast, that they're saying, Dad, when are we going to see Mom? Mm. And he's saying, at lunchtime. Huh. And that's really, when you think about the time of just from God's view, it's just a totally different timeline than what we think.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And it just makes you realize we hold on to like such small things in this life. And, you know, we, the pajama story,
I know
that sticks with me. You know,
I know it sticks with me too. When I start thinking of things that seem important that are not.
Right. Right. There's such bigger things out there. And,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's so good.
I know.
I really can't say thanks enough for opening your home.
I'm so glad. Yeah. Hopefully this will give people some hope and some means to find purpose in their life, to go on and to seek God.
I definitely think your story does that. You know, it's good. It's tragic and redeemed at the same time.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. It's good stuff. So let's jump in our final two questions. Okay. All right. So, so first, what is the craziest job that you've ever had?
I think the craziest job, was when I was, the summers after, senior year in high school, I went into Sears to, try to get a retail job, and they put me back in this receiving area where the trucks come and they unload all the boxes, and they had these little machines that we made tags. It's way different now, but I would be tagging like 200 pair of socks. Wow. I'd make like these little tags that you stick on every. And anyway, it was good for me to do something like that because, you know, I persevered in my life and the people were so nice, but it was just something that I never would have thought of doing, you know, back there. It's kind of rough and everything.
Yeah.
And, but there were hard workers back there. And, anyway, so there were different things you do, you know, maybe 25 blankets or something. You just, they would be wrapped up in the, you know, the plastic, and you just tag them for their prices.
I guess those tags get on there somehow, right?
Yeah. So anyway, it was just, I thought I'd be working with people out selling stuff, but, but anyway, there was something else for me, but it was good. I look back on it and I kind of liked it. So
That's cool. That's good. Okay. So finally, what is one piece of advice you would give to somebody looking to bring the kingdom of God more into their work?
Well, I think a lot of times what you necessarily don't say is an example of maybe drawing people to yourself and then through that seeing the Lord. I think relationships are so important, that just the love and grace you can give to people. And I think there's no way that somebody can't pick up on your being. And really, we all have heard it said, just ask you, there's something different about you. And I think that is a way that you can love and give grace and give them freedom. And we all are broken people. Yeah. And I think that people look at you differently, and they may, you kind of earn the right to maybe eventually share the gospel in that environment. But,
but you have to earn that right. Yeah.
You do have to earn that right, I think.
Yeah, I totally
but anyway, but I do think the bottom line of my story is just that God doesn't waste our suffering. He doesn't waste our suffering. And you can't see it from the first, but I look back on it now and I do see a lot of redeeming truths that have happened coming out of that. And I'm sure when we get to heaven, I'm not going to even care about any of that, you know?
Right. That's good. That's such good stuff.
Well, thanks.
Well, thank you again.
You're welcome.
It was so much fun to get to hang out.
I'm so glad you stopped by. I really am. I never get to see you.
I know, right?
Thank you so much.
I hope you enjoyed this episode with Helen. I hope you are just walking away with great hope and just hearing her story. And it is one that is hard to sort of work through even now for me. But it is such a powerful testimony to God's grace, God's faithfulness, and how God uses even the difficult things, even the tragedies, to bring people life. Yeah, that's who he is. He's a God that brings life. I do just want to reiterate one part of her story that I cannot shake, which is when she talks about coming home and her boys' pajamas being over the chairs where they had gotten ready in the morning, and just this notion that you just can't take anything with you. I'm just going to urge you to pray about that to meditate on about that, to kind of ask God what that means for you, because I feel like a lot of times we live this life just believing that this is all there is. And even if we don't believe it, we act like it. And so if we could get into a mindset where, you know, that our lives are for God's glory, I think it would really change things on a day-to-day basis in our work, in our relationships, in our communities. It could be transformational. So I hope you enjoyed. And until next time, get out there and hustle.